Welcome to the quarterly audio series of the North & Shantz Consulting Group. We call this series Straightforward, and it's designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest, Cheryl Epperly, leadership consultant at North & Shantz Consulting Group. Roger and Cheryl will be discussing Cheryl's leadership journey. Now from the North & Shantz Consulting Group, here's Roger North.
As a boy, I grew up a very, very big basketball fan. And I happened to grow up in southern New Jersey, very close to Philadelphia. In fact, my dad worked in Philadelphia, and so I naturally became a Philadelphia sports fan, and particularly a Philadelphia basketball fan. And so one of my very first heroes in life was number 13, 7'1", 300-pound Wilt Chamberlain. And I have to tell you, my guest today is the first person I have met that almost knows Wilt Chamberlain. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. My guest today is Cheryl Epperly, our newest North & Shantz associate, and she recently told me a story about almost meeting my hero, Wilt Chamberlain. Can you tell us that one, Cheryl?
Well, I thought I was meeting him, Roger. I was in the White House. There I was, working on Mrs. Reagan's staff in the early 80s. The White House was hosting an event for athletes, and there were all these amazingly tall and fit and great-looking people there in the East Room. My job as a staffer at the White House was to make them feel welcome. And Don, my husband, was there at the event as well, and I looked across the room and I saw Wilt Chamberlain, and I thought,
yes. Oh,
I can't believe I'm getting to meet him. And I decided to introduce Don to him. So we walked across the room and I said, Mr. Chamberlain, welcome to the White House. I hope you're feeling at home. I hope you're getting something to eat. And I just want you to know that we're thrilled to have you here. And he looked at me. He gave me kind of a cold stare. And then he said, I'm Bill Russell. That was one of those moments. Roger, you laugh. It was not funny then, but it...
What'd you do then?
I looked for a hole. I just hoped the floor would open up and swallow me. But, you know, I did what you can always do when you make a mistake like that, and that is apologize and move on.
Exactly.
It happens to everyone.
That's a great story, and I enjoyed it more the second time. And, of course, those of us who know basketball history know you could not have made a worse mistake because Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell were nothing if they were not arch rivals. And perhaps it could have been done the other way around. It would have been worse because, at least championship-wise, Russell always got the better of Chamberlain as a member of the Boston Celtics. Well, Cheryl, you've had some wonderful experiences in your life. I actually don't even know the answer to this, but I have to be curious about how you went from a Lancaster County farm to the White House as a staffer for Mrs. Reagan in just a period of a few short years. How did that come to pass?
Well, I was born on a farm. I grew up in a small town. And I guess I would have to say that I didn't know what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. It was that stage in life where you think you can do anything,
sure,
basically. But I had gotten a degree in communications and literature and with an emphasis on writing at Millersville University.
Mm-hmm.
Married my husband, Don, and he was in Washington working for a congressman. So I was looking for a job in Washington, ended up working for a congressman from Oklahoma who headed up Ronald Reagan's campaign in Oklahoma. One night, Don and I were just lying in bed, you know, talking about our lives and the day and all of that. And I said to him, I'm going to go work for Nancy Reagan. And Don said, you must. That's a great idea. The tribute of a supportive spouse makes a huge difference in your life.
Why did that pop into your mind? Had you met Mrs. Reagan?
No, I didn't meet her actually until her chief of staff hired me.
Okay.
I had done a lot of work over a couple of years in the congressional office and just thought it would be great to use my skills in writing and communicating at the White House. I don't know. It just seemed like the biggest thing you could reach for.
Sure.
And decided to go for it.
As you think about your experiences, for a period there, it seemed like Mrs. Reagan was somebody who, on one side, attracted a lot of admiration, on another side, seemed to attract a fair amount of derision or detractors. How does that happen to a person? What's your experience with the way people get maybe caricatured despite themselves? How does that occur?
Well, I think the press, sometimes you can't live with them and you can't live without them. Mm-hmm. And you really are in a fishbowl when you're in that position. And so everything she did was scrutinized. And Mrs. Reagan was devoted to one person. Mm-hmm. She was devoted to her husband, mm-hmm. and she was intent upon making the White House a comfortable place for him and for the two of them. And that meant making some changes there and bringing in her own furniture and that sort of thing. And she got criticized for that, even though she never used any taxpayer money for it. But it took a while for people to get to know her and to really see her heart, how she cared about kids who were struggling with drugs or cared about senior citizens. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think looking back on her years in the White House and her years as a public wife, we see that she did an amazing role. Mm-hmm. She was a very good public wife to Ronald mm-hmm. Reagan, and particularly as we look at how his life ended yeah. and how she protected him.
I think it's interesting, too, when presidents in particular have a life beyond the White House, how it enables us to maybe put things back in perspective. I think of that in the case of Mrs. Reagan because how her devotion to her husband continued right through the difficult end of his life as he experienced the disease that he experienced. And I think she just gained immeasurably in the public eye because of the devotion and the grace with which she handled that. The other public figure I just admire greatly, who I did not particularly admire on a personal level when he was serving us, is Jimmy Carter. I just think Jimmy Carter as an ex-president has set such a fine example of humility and of serving the public good, even after the time when we would have expected him to serve the public good when he was president. And I think sometimes history and time puts a much different slant on people as they go through time. And often it helps us to understand people in a different way.
I totally agree. And Jimmy Carter really was an influencer in his post-White House years in a unique way. Mm-hmm. He has written a number of books mm-hmm. and a lot of them on personal topics.
Yes.
They give you insights into him as a man and a father and a grandfather. You know, he went on for many years teaching Sunday school there yeah, in Plains,
yeah,
Georgia,
yeah.
even while people still called him Mr. President.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you continue that even when they're out of the White House.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that example of being connected to his roots, an apparent example of humility, has been a good example for us and very attractive to us. You've had the privilege of meeting a number of people that many of us would regard as leaders. As you've observed, and of course, you and I are in the business of helping leaders to grow, as you've observed different leaders on a national and international scale, are there some that really stand out to you because of the way they've gone about influencing other people?
Well, I admired Ronald Reagan a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He was a man who had a core passion about things. He had an inner compass, a vision for how the world should be,
mm-hmm.
and he followed that. He wasn't always taking polls and trying to figure out what people were thinking, but I think he really was led by something within him. So I admired that a lot. And, you know, on not an international level, but just some other business leaders I've known, mm-hmm. Ann Byler mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. Auntie Anne's has been an inspiration to me. She is a woman who has been true to herself, even though she's gone from, you know, being a little Amish girl to being a multimillionaire. Mm-hmm. She has not given up her core values and those inner things that really motivate her.
Core values, of course, is always a great conversation for North and Chance and for our clients. And it certainly applies on an individual level as well, as you've demonstrated with Ann Byler. And Cheryl, I think one of the things that connected us together as we came together was there was a certain resonance between what you were about, what you stood for, and what North and Chance intends to stand for, some of our core values. Can you talk a little bit about how we kind of mutually discovered that connection? What were some of the conversations that were meaningful to you as we got to know each other and decided that we ought to be on the same team?
Well, I did sense in you an interest in some of the same values that I have, and mm-hmm. they are in growing.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about staying true to yourself, and up to a point, that's good, but you should also be growing that self.
Yeah.
And I discovered a number of years ago that I have really two options in life. I can either be discovering and learning and growing, or I can be protecting myself and saying, oh, I've conquered this mm-hmm. ground. This is who I am, and this is where I'm going to stay. It actually feels safe and secure here. But that's not the best path. And the path of discovery is better.
Oh,
it's more
that.
Exciting. It feels risky. It
yep.
takes confidence. It
yep.
takes courage. It takes friends coming alongside you to help you along the way. and to learn insights about how life could be better for you and how you could be better with other people.
You know, Cheryl, that reminds me of something that I've been thinking about quite a lot over the last couple of years. I have a good friend. She's an affiliate consultant in the North and Chance, Joanne Ladley. And Joanne has challenged me tremendously over the last couple of years in our relationships, as our relationship has grown. And one of the things which we kind of joke a little bit back and forth about is a phrase that she picked up that she's exported to me. And she says, Roger, every once in a while, you just have to stand in the unknowing. And I really love that. And I see it's been important to me because I am a person that prefers to know. And I prefer to have well-defined boundaries and stay within those lines and require other people to do that. But that's not always the best path.
Well, I agree with Joanne completely, and it's not the easiest path by any means. But it does open up amazing things at times that you never expected. When you are thinking about taking a risky step, something that appears risky, you can picture in your mind what will happen. And it may be scary, it may be negative, but often something completely different happens, something completely wonderful. So go for it.
And a lot of times, Cheryl, I think that's the privilege that many of our North and Chance clients are granting to us, is to walk with them into a period of discovery, even a period of standing in the not knowing or the unknowing. Because what they're essentially saying to us when they hire us is, we want to go to a place or become a place that we haven't been before, and we don't know how to get there, but we think you're the folks we want to have walking down that path with us. And I just find that to be an incredible blessing, an incredible privilege, to have people come to us and say, you're the folks that we want to walk down that path of discovery with. And I think that's one of the many things that attracted us, speaking of North and Chance, to you, and that we would get together and be on the same team, is you're a person that's very curious about other people. You're insightful about other people, and you're willing to walk a path that hasn't been walked before.
Well, I'm excited about being involved on the North and Chance team as well. And, you know, it's a lot easier to walk down that path if you have someone going alongside you to ask some questions and help you think through what lies ahead for you.
Yeah, and Cheryl, for a few prior years, you were working on your own, doing a variety of things, a variety of projects and so forth. And so you've made a choice now to be part of a team. And of course, we're thrilled about that. But there are a number of advantages to working on your own and having independence and some manner of control over your time and destiny and so forth. What were some of the things happening in your life that are happening in your life that have convinced you that being a part of a team is a better option for you?
I've been an author and a speaker, Roger, and have loved that. Wrote a book, 365 Manners Kids Should Know, and which parents can use to beat their kids over the head with if they want. And the book has done well, and I have enjoyed that. But when you work on your own, you have all the freedom you want. It's also lonely, and you don't often have the feedback when you feel you need it to make your product or service better. So I am so thrilled to be part of the North and Chance team, to work together and to get feedback from you all and help make your services better, too.
There's no doubt that that's happening already. And one of the conversations you and I have had a couple of times is how some of the work you've done in the past creates a bridge to what we need to be doing with and for our clients. And you mentioned the book you wrote, 365 Manners Kids Should Know. So I've been teased by a couple of my friends as to whether I'm bringing in a manners consultant or an etiquette consultant onto the team. And of course, the answer to that is yes and no. We are bringing on a person who is extraordinarily knowledgeable in that area, but that's not really going to be your principal role at North and Chance. Your principal role is going to be similar to what we already do, and that is to walk along with organizations in their leadership growth and their organizational growth as they move into the future, and you're going to continue to do that very effectively. But I know you've mentioned that you've seen some connections between your philosophy about a civil society, about manners, about how other people are treated, and the way in which we deal in the business realm. What are some of those observations?
Well, there are connections. And by the way, Roger, I do want to be sure that you know which fork to use to scratch your back.
Or to pick my teeth, right?
Exactly. But, you know, sometimes people think, oh, what an uppity topic to talk about etiquette and manners. And The reason I talk about it is because I have more experience with social error than most people. I'm an expert on
Bill Russell
making
and
mistakes.
Wilt Chamberlain,
exactly.
Plain fact, huh?
And we don't have time for all the other stories. But manners are also about respecting other people and really being able to focus on other people. And there's a saying that people don't really remember what you say. They probably won't remember what you do, but they will remember how they felt when they were with you.
Absolutely.
And if you're able to respect them and listen to them, look at them when you speak to them, make them feel that you really care about them, that's where the manners come in, and it makes a difference in business.
Absolutely. And one of the things I've really been thinking about quite a bit lately and talking with friends and associates about is how we were made to be emotional people. In fact, we are emotional people, and even the most logical, figures-oriented business people I know still make many more of their decisions based on emotion than they do on fact. And that's not a criticism. That's just reality. We are emotional beings. And so how people feel about being around you, about being around me, about being around other members of their team, about being around the CEO or whoever it is that they need to be effective with is absolutely relevant to business results.
That's exactly right. And if a certain graciousness comes across from you, other people will be open to you. You know, Roger, you may have the best ideas in the world. You may have the best plan, the best strategy. But if people feel put off by you, or if they don't feel that you respect them or hear them, they're not going to hear what you have to say. And graciousness and courtesy towards others helps them feel that.
You know, that's an interesting insight, because every once in a while I'll get the question who our competitors are. Speaking of North and Shantz, people say, well, who do you ordinarily compete with when somebody's making a choice to hire a leadership or organizational development consultant? And I say, well, the most common competitor for us to deal with is the ghost of consultants past. And of course, what people mean when they talk about the ghosts of consultants past is they mean people that have been in their organization before and have not built a relationship with the people in that organization so as to understand what's been valuable in that organization, and instead have come in and without asking those types of questions, without feeling what's been valuable about that organization, without getting to know the people, they've imposed ways of doing business that were not effective for the people that were there or the culture that had been established. And so it reminds me of how important it is to understand where people are, to understand how they feel and how they are likely to respond given the emotional experiences they've had in the past, and the fact that most of us act on our emotions much more often than we act on logic or analysis of any nature. And that's okay. That's just the way it is. We're emotional beings. That's the way that we've been made. And I think those types of insights are the types that we need to bring into the workplace if we're going to understand how it is people respond to each other as they work together toward a common goal in a business. Cheryl, tell us a little bit about your family of origin and now your family that you're part of now as an adult.
Well, I grew up in Smoketown.
Smoketown, Lancaster County.
Smoketown, Lancaster County. And I have extended family as far as the eye can see. Grew up in a family of five children. One brother is now living in Ohio, but everyone else is here in the area, and it's wonderful. My husband, Don Eberle, also grew up in the area and has extended family, even more extended than mine is, and all of his family's here except one brother who lives in Ohio. We have three children, Preston, who's at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, and a daughter who's at University of Virginia in Charlottesville, and a ninth grader here at Hempfield.
Three is a good number, Cheryl. I really like three, and of course, we have three children as well, and it's just a real privilege to be getting to know you, to have you part of our team. And as we wrap things up here today, I just thought maybe you could give us a little insight as to a subject I spend a lot of time talking about with my CEO friends and clients, and that is, where does your energy come from? A lot of times as I'm talking with leaders, I find that they express a certain tiredness about the responsibilities that they have. And so we often shift that conversation to what brings energy to you and what takes energy out of you. And I think that's just a key thing for us as leaders to be managing. And I'm wondering for you, as you go on a journey of self-knowledge and understanding who you are and how you're most effective, what do you find yourself getting energy from?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I think a general answer is when I'm working within my calling. Someone said that your calling is where your great joy and the world's deep need meet.
Oh, I really like that.
And God has given me unique gifts, mm-hmm. as He has given you and everyone else. Mm-hmm. And if I am fortunate enough to be in a position where I can use them, I'm energized. I love a project. I love something that starts and I learn something new and I bring it to fruition mm-hmm. and it ends. I love being organized and getting something done. Lancaster County work ethic, being able to yep. work hard.
Yep.
But I also really enjoy relationships with people and am energized by discovering something along with someone else. My energy is sapped or diminished by negativity, mm-hmm. by complaining, mm-hmm. by people who see the cup as half empty mm-hmm. rather than half
mm-hmm.
full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this whole question of energy, I think, is just so important for us, particularly as we get older and start to recognize when we're at our best and when we're not. I think it becomes more and more incumbent on us that we preserve a best for the people that deserve the best in our lives, our families, our clients, our friends, the people that have been important to us, and bring our best to them. And I think the way that we can do that is simply to recognize what brings us energy when we're in the center of the calling. And isn't it a wonderful thing when that intersection that you referred to becomes a part of our life every once in a while, just that moment or series of moments when we realize that what we're doing, we're right in the middle of right now, is where we were intended to be. And we hope that we have many more moments like that in the future, and we think we will with you on our team. It's been an absolute pleasure, Cheryl, to have you on Straightforward today. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you, Roger.
Have a great day, everybody.
In our effort to provide you with direction for your future, North & Shantz continues to work closely with businesses in developing their leadership journey, management performance, and sales results. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.